DW Deutsche Welle. Spectrum.
Hello and welcome to Spectrum on DW, deep and dirty in the worlds of science and technology. I'm Zulfi Karabani, and coming up, social messaging kills SMS. We wonder what mobile network providers can do to fight back. Then we go all street on ya. Well, we'll be hearing all about the technology behind Rio's gun detector, that is. And could you live without your mobile phone?
Sometimes I feel the need to just shut down my mobile phone and to not connect to computer, mobile, to anything. And it feels really good. But it also feels good when you connect again.
All that and more right here on Spectrum. But first, it's perhaps no news to say that smartphones have apps for almost everything these days. Alone in the area of health, smartphones can tell us how many calories a burger has. You can measure your heartbeat and even do an eye exam. But now a team of researchers and software developers in Uganda has developed an app to measure the heart rate of unborn children. It's not always the easiest thing for pregnant women in the East African country to monitor their baby's development in the womb. There's a lack of access to hospitals, for instance, and health professionals. But the researchers say that smartphones will have a growing role in sub-Saharan Africa's future. Guillaume Corray de Silva reports.
Uganda's maternal and child mortality rates are high, and one of the reasons is that it can be hard for pregnant women to access medical supervision. It's estimated that there is only one nurse for every 5,000 pregnant mothers in Uganda, and many mothers have to walk long distances to reach the closest clinic. It's an issue that has troubled software developer Aaron Tushabe and his team, but they say they've found an answer in smartphone technology.
Why this gadget is very important, very critical right now, is that it's addressing a real-life need. When you go out there today, we actually see mothers walking over 2 kilometers to access antenatal care.
After 5 months of hard work, the Ugandan team came up with the application Winsenga. This is how it works. First, you take a pinat horn, an instrument similar to an ear trumpet. Midwives have been using it for more than a century to listen to the fetus's heartbeats. Aaron and his team modify the horn by placing a microphone inside, which connects to a smartphone. You put the horn over the woman's womb, you click a button on the smartphone app, and then you see it, a graphic with the unborn baby's heartbeat, a line that goes up and down on the screen of the phone. The device won this year's Microsoft East and Southern Africa Imagine Cup, but the developers say it needs more testing in the field before it can be fully implemented. Tushabe says Winsenga could be a substitute to expensive ultrasound scans, particularly where there is no electricity. Equipped with just a mobile device, midwives could soon provide medical assistance in remote areas.
We're moving from a device that was stationary and a device that would not function when electricity was unavailable. Now we have a device which is mobile and has a battery life of 5 to 10 hours, but it has a battery life.
But while the number of people using cell phones in Africa has been rising steadily, smartphones are far less common. According to the pollster Gallup, up to 57% of adults in 17 countries south of the Sahara own a mobile phone. But smartphones are still too expensive. Tushabe is confident the number will rise.
It's predicted that within 3 years' time, there will probably be more of these devices in Africa than they are in the U.S. So the communities here in Africa have been very positive towards adapting to these smartphones, particularly because of their use.
Henry Addo, a Ghanaian software developer with the non-profit tech firm Ushahidi, agrees. He says there's real potential on the continent for companies to invest.
If a company focuses on making a really affordable smartphone for sub-Saharan Africa, that company is going to make a lot of money because the people are hungry for it.
Some have already entered the market. Last year, Kenya's telecoms operator Safaricom launched an Android phone that costs $80 US, or about 65 euros, in partnership with the Chinese mobile maker Huawei. But the cost is not the only problem. Erika Koshi is one of the heads of UNICEF's tech innovations team. She says that if smartphones are to achieve their full potential in Africa, battery life will have to improve significantly. They will also have to be more robust, and it needs to be easier for people to get them fixed.
If these kind of challenges can be overcome, I do see them taking off, because I do think that there's, you know, a very large desire for not only connectivity and communication, but, you know, access to more rich content and information.
The future could come quicker than we think. UNICEF already plans to help Aaron Tushabe and his team in the implementation phase of their fetal monitoring system in Uganda.
Guillaume Corail de Silva reporting there. Well, that's perhaps the good side of mobile communication, and here's some of the bad. Some organisations say that human rights abuses are regularly committed in countries like the Democratic Republic of Congo, when the rare metals that are needed in the production of mobiles are sourced. A German Catholic aid body now wants to raise awareness about cell phone production and human rights. Rebecca Hillauer spoke with Father Justin Nkunzi Bayanjunzi about the situation in his country. The report is presented by Kathleen Schuster.
The big problem is that there are still rebels in the countryside who are terrorizing the population there. They're exploiting the resources and using the money to buy weapons so that they can wage war against their fellow countrymen.
Father Justin Nkunzi Bayunjunzi knows what he's talking about. The pastor leads the Justice and Peace Commission for the Bukavu Archdiocese. The eastern Congo city sits close to the rebel region. Even though the civil war officially ended 10 years ago, peace still hasn't come to these areas. The villagers are at the mercy of the rebels. Women and young girls live in constant fear of being brutally assaulted. The rebels also degrade the men and boys by forcing them to extract natural resources from the ground.
We call them blood minerals because the only way to get them is through violence and suffering.
Human rights organizations estimate that the militias earn up to $225 million per year from the illegal trade. They also deplete the ground of the ore coltan, which yields a rare metal called tantalum. And tantalum is used in capacitors for digital cameras, laptops, and cell phones. Father Justin is demanding countries to require a certificate of origin from cell phone manufacturers. That way, people know where the raw materials came from. They must ban importing the so-called blood minerals, says the Congolese minister.
The plundered resources from Congo aren't shipped directly to Europe. Instead, they travel through many countries first. Each country declares them differently. This works because international firms are in cahoots with Congo rebels and middlemen in neighboring countries. It's no secret how the minerals make their way out of the country. The airlines and shipping companies that operate between Congo and other countries are public.
A UN report already denounced these grievances 10 years ago, but the illegal mineral trade continues to flourish. So the Catholic aid organization Missio launched the Clean Cell Phone Signature Campaign. Missio is calling for leading manufacturers to ensure that they don't use any, quote, blood tantalum from Congo in cell phones. The aid organization's financial support has also helped Father Justin establish 16 trauma centers in rebel areas for assault victims. He's also informing the population about the blood mineral business. Of course, profiteers don't like this. The priest barely escaped a bullet.
We really can't let this affect our work. We hope that the international community, which attaches such great importance to democracy and transparency, will finally do something about it. I dream that a democratic land like Germany will enact a law that will only allow for imports of certified minerals.
Father Justin hopes that the Clean Cell Phone campaign will serve as a wake-up call to consumers, and that they then will put pressure on the cell phone manufacturers so that buying policies will change and drive fair trade with raw materials.
For example,
if, let's say, a representative from Nokia were to travel to Congo, talk to the people there and take a look at their working conditions in order to be convinced by the Missio campaign, that itself would be a huge achievement. There's a saying that the sun comes out after the rain. I hope that's what will happen in Congo one day.
Father Justin Nkunzi Bayanjunzi, the co-author of the report Congo, A Balance of Violence, ending that report there by Rebecca Hillauer. Now, I did something rather strange at the weekend. I bought a newspaper, a paper one, no less, and read a rather interesting little article that had come out of the Frankfurt Book Fair. It said that the London-based publisher Faber plans to pioneer publishing the novel as an app to truly make digital technology part of the creative and reading experience. Now, according to Guardian's review section, the novel by Ian Pearce will mix genres and styles, and readers will be able to gain different perspectives depending on which order they access the text. Flexibility, writes The Guardian, that the app technology will enable. Well, I hate to poop the idea here, but I distinctly remember reading paper-bound books about 20 years ago that did just the same. One of them was, no less, a simple Asterix book. And I wonder whether technology is getting credit here for ideas that have long existed, and we're just rebranding them as something new with the tag of technology to let us think that we're still advancing as a species. Now, the reason I mention all this is that the same has just happened, it seems, with the humble SMS, or text messages. It seems we're no longer happy with the old SMS, or at least the idea of paying for each individual short message, and we're all gradually migrating towards social messaging. Services like WhatsApp, which allow you to send messages over your mobile broadband deal, rather than paying for each cluster of 140 characters. In fact, the telecommunications industry is in the process of losing about $23 billion this year in what would have been SMS revenue. By 2016, their losses are expected to double. That's according to Nia Daria, a consumer telecommunications analyst with Ovum.
Currently, we estimate about $23 billion to be lost in SMS revenue at the end of this year, and that number will escalate to $54 billion in 2016. That's basically the loss in 2016. It's not a cumulative loss. So $54 billion will be lost in SMS revenue in the year 2016.
And this is through social messaging.
Exactly.
Where are you getting the numbers from? I have to ask you that first of all, just briefly.
So it's basically a shift in consumer patterns. So when you buy a bundle, you pay for mobile broadband, you pay for messaging, and you pay for certain voice minutes. So as consumers' preferences shift, they kind of attribute more importance towards mobile broadband, and a larger chunk of that money from that bundle goes to mobile broadband, and a smaller one is attributed to messaging. So we studied the numbers over the years, and that's what we've come up with, the loss in messaging. And it's pretty much going towards mobile broadband as of now.
And you've cited some of the most dominant social messaging apps, like WhatsApp. There's also Text Plus or Pinterest or Fring. Let's just have a look at WhatsApp for a second. Are you sure that the dominance will grow? I mean, you said that they're getting bigger and bigger in Singapore and the Netherlands. Yeah. Are you sure the dominance is going to grow? Because if you look at the forums, certainly on the latest versions of WhatsApp, they're dropping in popularity. People are very unhappy with the service.
People are getting quite pickier with the service. When the service first started, everyone was happy because it was a free service. It gave several qualitative advantages over SMS as a service. You could do group chats, you could share pictures. And now, while more and more people adopt it, you tend to kind of get pickier and you want a higher class of service. So that's the only reason why people are actually kind of complaining about certain bits of it. But if you look at the numbers, the subscriber rates are kind of growing at immensely fast paces, about 900% in the past year for just EU5. And along with that, you have messaging volumes growing at an alarming rate as well. I think 10 billion messages were sent on a daily basis just a couple of months ago for WhatsApp. So you see a high rate of engagement growing, though you might see a few forums where they get a bit pickier with the service quality.
And why do you suggest that that it's operators in Europe and Asia that will be hit the most?
They have been hit the most because you see declining revenues. In fact, in Germany, we're seeing revenue decline in SMS. And in Asia-Pac, so in Japan and South Korea, services such as KakaoTalk and Line have been doing really well for the past couple of years, and they've actually come into like loggerheads with operators such as SKT in South Korea, and they've had legislation and they've gone to the regulators to dampen the effect of these operators. So Asia-Pac has been hit a lot more than the rest of the world, I would say.
And is this a case of the technology, let's say the SMS technology becoming outdated, or is there a way for the telcos to fight back? I mean, are they going to have to start striking deals with the social messaging platforms?
Actually, a lot of the operators have actually started to strike deals with WhatsApp in particular. I think Three in Hong Kong has already got a roaming pass in place with WhatsApp. So that's one of the examples of operators and WhatsApp working together. So yeah, this is already happening. And SMS as a technology is fairly outdated because you can just send one message to one person and that's about it. There isn't much you can actually do with it. You can't send it to multiple people. You can't have a group chat. You can't have location sharing.
That's like the world of Twitter. It's taken over, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Our expectations of what we can do and whom we can reach have grown, haven't they?
And rightly so, because technology is improving and we'd like our messaging technology to improve with the times as well.
So the main thing here, those striking deals, but are the traditional telcos, are we going to see more of them buying out these services, say that the smaller services?
I don't think we'll see purchases as such, but we will see telcos making their own initiative. Telefonica, for one, has launched Tumi, and a social messaging app in itself, where you can make voice calls and send IP-based messages. So you see initiatives like this coming up around telcos. Deutsche Telekom has invested in its venture Next. It's also investing in kind of social messaging apps, and they're seeing how they can further diversify their messaging portfolio. Also, the biggest initiative happening in Europe is RCS in the name of Join.
That's the rich communication suite, isn't it?
Exactly. So that's something which operators are putting a lot of money and time into.
Just tell us briefly, how is that going to change the game? Because that's yet to really become a reality, hasn't it?
Yeah, and we've been hearing about this for the past 2 years, I think, or more, in fact. And we see at least 2 more years before it hits mainstream. But operators are fairly sure that they're going to take communication to the next level. There's going to be a lot more IP-based communication in place. They're going to have integration with social networks. You're going to be able to play games with your contacts.
So file sharing, video calls and that sort of
thing. Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be a far richer form of communication.
Neha Daria, consumer telecommunications analyst there with Ovum in Mumbai. And you're listening to Spectrum with me, Zulfikar Abani, on DW Online. We're at dw.de/spectrum. And you can, of course, follow us at dw_SciTech. Right, well, we're going to take a little detour now. We will get back to the world of mobile communication in just a moment. But now, I bet there's one app that has yet to be developed for smartphones, and that's the Rio Gun Detector. Rio de Janeiro is stepping up security ahead of 2 major events which it plans to hold, the 2014 World Cup and the 2016 Olympic Games. Authorities have introduced several measures to address security issues that have dogged the marvellous city for decades. The latest is the adoption of American technology that detects gunfire and sends alerts to the nearest police station. Here's Sam Cowie.
Gunshots ring out on Rua Mata Machado, a quiet residential street in northern Rio de Janeiro, about a kilometre away from the world-famous Maracanã football stadium, where the 2014 World Cup final will be played. An arsenal of weapons are being unloaded. Revolvers, automatic pistols, shotguns and assault rifles. But this isn't a shootout or a siege. Authorities in Rio de Janeiro hope shortly to install a gunshot detector system, and this is the second round of testing. Colonel George Freitas is head of sensory and monitoring in the Department of Security. He explains the basics of the system.
We're testing a device that detects gunfire, and we need to verify where gunshots occur. When a firearm is discharged, a person, a victim, could be injured and need help. We want to use this system to reduce the time it takes for us to respond.
The sensors pick up the sound waves of a muzzle blast as they radiate after a shot is fired. Each sensor is capable of detecting the sound of gunfire within a 2-mile or 3-kilometre radius. And the system calculates the difference in time that it takes for the sound of a gunshot to reach 3 different sensors to determine where a gunshot was fired. The system then uses built-in GPS receivers to convert that known point into latitude and longitude coordinates, and that information is passed to the nearest police station as an alert. Colonel Freitas again.
From the very moment that a gunfire incident occurs, the system provides a reading with a GPS reference, so we will know where the event occurred. We will be able to reduce the time required to respond to incidents because the system immediately requests police attendance.
There's hope that the system will soon be fully operational. It's the latest security measure being introduced as Rio de Janeiro prepares to host the 2014 World Cup. Despite security levels in Rio de Janeiro being their highest in years, the city still experiences a high level of gunshots. Armed robberies have decreased in years but are still prevalent. There are also over 600 favelas in the city proper, many of which are controlled by armed drug factions or militiamen. Lynn Oliveira is an artist who has lived in Tijuca, where the system is being tested, for the last 10 years.
E aí o quadro da Tijuca ele mudou, né? Que eu já sei qual é a pergunta, porque...
Unfortunately, as well as the incredible natural beauty, Rio is also known for high levels of violence. In Tijuca, we have two favelas in particular where there are a lot of gunshots that can be heard day or night. This is unpleasant for visitors and people who live here alike. The security situation has improved in the city immensely in recent years, however, and I hope this will continue and have a lasting impact after the World Cup and Olympics.
ShotSpotter was launched in California in 1999 in the city of Redwood and is used in more than 50 cities across the United States, including Washington, D.C., Boston and Chicago. A ShotSpotter system was also installed in Birmingham in the UK last year in an attempt to tackle gang crime. But the system is not 100% accurate. The version installed in Birmingham is reported to have missed at least 5 incidents of gunfire. In Rio de Janeiro, the system is still being tested, but if approved, will go live in and around the Tijuca neighborhood and cover a 5-square-kilometer radius. Colonel Freitas.
Olha, o Rio tem se caracterizado, além de suas belezas naturais, pela violência.
We did an area study before deciding where to install the system between 2010 and 2011. And in that time, the situation in Tijuca changed. The number of incidents decreased. But Tijuca, including Maracanã, Vila Isabel and Grajao, will soon host major events, the FIFA Confederations Cup, the World Cup and the Olympics.
The upcoming events are making local authorities nervous. They don't want any gun incidents overshadowing the World Cup or the next Olympics. And right now, they're betting on ShotSpotter to help make the international sporting events a success. If the system is indeed a success in Rio de Janeiro, it's possible that ShotSpotter will be extended to all 12 host cities of the 2014 World Cup. Sam Cowie, DW, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil.
Digital Europe, bringing the continent's tech scene to your ears.
Okay, come on, be honest. How dependent are you on your mobile phones? And how would you feel if you lost your phone or it got stolen? And we have so many communication options today. Email, Facebook, Twitter, Skype, you name it. All sorts of ways to waste your time. All in addition to the old landline. Or perhaps you've done away with your landline completely and you rely on your smartphone for everything. Well, DW's Cinnamon Nippard lost her smartphone, no less, 3 weeks ago. Not so smart. She decided to see how long she could last without it.
I finally got a smartphone at the beginning of this year, and while I only used 1% of its capabilities, there were particular things that were super useful, like maps and the ability to check email, Facebook, and train and bus timetables on the fly. And it was great to have music and podcasts to listen to in transit. I have to say, at first, I didn't check my email that much, but recently I'd been checking it a little compulsively, and had also felt a little stressed out about being contactable all the time. Then I lost it. That was over 3 weeks ago. It felt so weird not to have a phone. And then strangely, I felt free. I felt like my mind was clearer. I wasn't distracted by the constant push and pull of digital messaging. To be honest, I was pretty mad at myself for losing my phone. But then I just decided to make the most of it. And it turns out I wasn't alone.
I didn't lose one, but I ran out of battery in vacations and without my charger. It was great. It was really great. And that's actually from this moment on that I decided from time to time to just turn off the phone and to not be connected anymore.
Do you think you could live without a mobile phone?
Professionally, it would be hard because of the calendar, because of the mails, reminders. Personally, sometimes I feel the need to just shut down my mobile phone and to not connect to computer, mobile, to anything, and it feels really good. But it also feels good when you connect again, especially when you're in a foreign country, to stay in touch with your family, with your friends.
Like Annabella, I need a phone for my work. As a journalist, I'd be crazy not to have one. And for the 3 weeks I didn't have one, I had to rethink a lot of my day-to-day life. Without a smartphone, I had to be more prepared before I left the house to do interviews. I had to write down bus and train connections, print out maps, and confirm times from home via landline and email, and also use the alarm on my watch to get up in the morning. Professionally, it wasn't too much of a hassle, but personally, there were a few hiccups. A couple of times I'd arranged to meet friends, and they didn't show up, or they'd show up late, and I realized that the arrangement to meet is really based on that old-school notion of trust. 34-year-old Donna got her first mobile phone in January of this year.
When I didn't have a phone, people knew I didn't have a phone. They had to be on time. And now they send an SMS saying, oh, I'm a little bit later. So that actually changed like the interaction between people a whole lot.
But the only reason Donna actually got a mobile phone was for online banking. Her bank started to send out TANs, or transaction authentication numbers, via SMS. So it was the only way she could do her banking online, even at home. But there are workarounds, as I rediscovered when I had to pay my bills. You might remember this yourself. Back in the day, before online banking and mobile phones, people actually went into a bank to make payments in person. So, sure enough, there I was, paying my bills at an ATM at my local branch. It felt a bit weird paying my bills in public, but there were other things that felt a lot better. When I was hanging out with friends, there was no extra distraction. Donna knows the feeling well, friends constantly checking their phones.
People are way more comfortable. I felt I had endless discussions about how, like, what, you don't have a phone, and how can I reach you? And it was like the end of the world, and I felt like I had more of a hassle explaining everybody why I didn't have a phone, or that was really no big problem for me than now that I just have one. It makes communication easier.
But I also noticed just how ubiquitous they've become. On the train, at the bus stop, everyone was absorbed in their devices. Headphones on, playing computer games, checking email, text messages, and listening to music. Sebastian says he just couldn't function without his smartphone.
I don't understand people that can live without mobile phones. I use my phone for everything, to check my emails. I use my phone to connect my friends, send some messages, short messages like WhatsApp or SMS. So I think it's the easiest and fastest way to get in contact with somebody.
Have you ever lost your phone?
Yes, in a pool. Yeah, it's a funny story, but I was very upset about this, yeah.
Oh, no. And how long did you not have a phone for?
Around 1 to 2 weeks, yeah. It was very hard for me, yeah.
When I lost my phone, I decided to use the opportunity to switch mobile phone providers, and it took 23 days for me to get my number back. The wait stressed me out for a while, but I quickly got used to the idea and realized that actually a lot of communication is unnecessary. Flat rates mean we no longer care or know how many messages are too many messages. But now that I've got myself reconnected, I'm going to check myself before I hit send. Cinnamon Nippard, DW, Berlin.
And Cinnamon did tell us she was a bit nervous about letting everybody know that she's back online, so to speak. But there you go, it's out in the public domain. Well, that's just about all from Spectrum on DW for now. Don't forget, you can always keep up with our stuff at dw.de/science. Listen again or download the podcast at dw.de/spectrum. I'm Zulfikar Ambani. Studio tech was Melanie Schlicht. Next week, you can get all the lowdown on the pharmaceuticals industry. Hope you can make it then. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.
The gift that we have, the life that we breathe. This world can leave you broken inside, with nowhere to hide. I'm hanging on to my pride. We are here. We've been chosen. We've been blessed with a place we need to find and then open. We are here. We can love. We share something. You need.
you have.